Isaiah chapter 40. Now, we got to remember here, when you're looking at the Word of God, and you're looking at a prophet like Isaiah, you're looking at a specific point where God is prosecuting His warfare against the forces of darkness. And in the process of driving idolatry out of mankind. Now, you know, as illustration, Gallatin County is involved in trying to have countywide zoning. Okay, now I don't know if you guys thought about that, but if you like the idea that the guys that run Bozeman zoning the whole county, you may want to think about that. Now, the idea is that, you know, somehow we have to have a plan. Okay, you have to have a plan. Well, everybody's got a plan. If I have a piece of property, you know, my plan might be to, you know, let it go quack grass and leafy spurge. You know, I mean that's still a plan, okay? So when you have what they call zoning, what you have is centralized planning, and that's the process by which you turn over control of your property to somebody else that's theoretically going to be democratically operated. Now, I can tell you a lot about how democracies really work, but the point is that when it comes to planning, okay, you can't see what the plan is. I remember one time I was driving across eastern Montana. I was doing some presentations in Glendive. And about 10 miles this side of Glendive, there's a ridge there. And there's some oil wells up on that ridge. And, you know, there's the, you know, pumps going and working away, pumping. And there was a guy I immersed quite a number of years ago. His name was Dennis Conlon. Dennis is part of the Conlon Furniture family, and some of you may remember Dennis. Dennis currently lives in Minneapolis and attends the Northwest Church of Christ in Minneapolis. But for a while, he was selling, or he was working for the oil companies, and he was purchasing the mineral rights on the property, because when they were drilling in the Williston Basin, which lays along the Montana-North Dakota border, they were drilling every quarter section, as every 160 acres in the center of that, and every single quarter section they were hitting oil. And what they did with those wells, as a side note, they just capped them. Now, all that oil's there. And they never did, you know, complete the exploration on all the limits of the Williston Basin. But it's huge. And it's rich, okay? But the reason that, you know, he was out there purchasing the mineral rights is, okay, you got the property owner, say he's got 160 acres here. He owns the land, and then he owns what's underneath the land. And so in order for the oil companies to get the oil out, they got to purchase the mineral rights. Now, you can sit there and you can look at a piece of property, and all you can see is the piece of property. And if the oil company has the mineral rights for that piece of property, you have no clue as to what the plans for that piece of property are. You won't know until the rigs show up. You know, the other day I went to Great Falls through Wilsall and on to White Sulphur Springs, and there's a set of hills north of Wilsall there that got oil in them, and so there's a couple big rigs there, and I've seen they point some stuff down in there. My guess is that they've drilled for coal bed methane, is my guess, and so you can see those things, you know, you can kind of see a string of them out there, but you don't know. I mean, you don't even know what it is for sure, and you certainly don't know what the plan is. Now, the book of Isaiah is like that. You're you're sitting there, and the book of Isaiah is like one of those oil wells that's pumping. Okay? And you see that, but without a perspective on what the whole Bible is all about, you don't know what the plan is. You know what the plan is. But with the perspective of the whole Bible, you can see where Isaiah fits, and you can see what its purpose is. Now, as soon as man rebelled against God in the Garden of Eden, man plunged directly into idolatry, the worship of self and worship of images made by the art and thought of man. And the reason for that is, you know, if you create your own little set of gods, then you can create those gods so that they'll allow whatever you want them to allow. See, it's a pretty good system. And so that's why in all your ancient pagan religions, you had, among other things, rampant sexual immorality. You had every kind of perversion, vice, destruction that you can think of. If we go back to, hold your place here in Isaiah 40, but if we go back to Genesis chapter 6, just by way of review, we see what the impact of all of that was. From Adam to the flood is 1,656 years, which in one manner of speaking is comparatively short time. But in Genesis chapter 6, in verse 3, it says, "The Lord said, My spirit shall not strive with man forever, because he's also flesh. Nevertheless, his days shall be 120 years. That is, he's going to give him 120 years to repent. Okay. Now, in verse 5, the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually." Now, that's a pretty major blanket statement. Okay, I mean, that shows you the descent of man and how rapidly it was. So, of course, we know the record of the flood was to wipe man off the surface of the earth and start over. But man started that same downward cycle. By the time we get to Abraham, God calls Abraham out of Ur of the Chaldees. If it's the Ur of the Chaldees that we found the ruins of toward the Persian Gulf, it was a city that was dedicated to the worship of the moon. That's pretty typical of the Babylonians. The Babylonians worshiped the moon and the stars a little bit more, whereas the Egyptians tend to worship the sun. In fact, is the zodiac, the horoscope as it's called, the zodiac is actually the Babylonian zodiac, and it's still set for the way the stars were positioned back in the days of the ancient Babylonians. So you got to understand that the Earth, as it spins on its axis, it spins counterclockwise. Counterclockwise here. It's like a top. You know, if you're spinning a top, the top will be spinning really fast, but the top, you know, the axis of that top will kind of spin like that. That's what the Earth is doing, and it's very, very slow. And so the North Pole of the Earth is pointed a different direction now than it was in the days of the ancient Babylonians and the ancient Egyptians. And so that's why the zodiac, we know, you know, the origin of the zodiac, round figures, 2500 to 3000 BC, because of the way it's positioned with regard to the stars. See, there's things like that you wouldn't think about. But mankind worshiped idols just from the beginning. And so God called Abraham out of the Ur of the Chaldees, if that was the city dedicated to the worship of the moon. When God brings Israel out of Egypt through Moses, you know, we got a problem. Let's turn to Acts chapter 7, and here's a quotation that Stephen uses out of the prophet Amos. Acts chapter 7, verse 42. To me, some of the saddest words of the Bible, Acts 7, 42. But God turned away and delivered them up to serve the host of heaven, as it is written in the book of the prophets. It was not to me that you offered victims and sacrifices 40 years in the wilderness, was it, O house of Israel? You also took along the tabernacle of Moloch and the star of the god Rampha, the images which you made to worship them. I also will remove you beyond Babylon. See, I mean, here they are. They've heard the voice of God thunder, the Ten Commandments. They stood at the base of the mountain that shook. They watched the destruction that followed in connection with the golden calf. But what are they doing in the back tents? You know, I mean, here you got 605,000 round figures, 603,550 to start with. Men, that'd basically be about 600,000 tents out there. And how are you going to police every one of them? Well, if you're human, you're not. If you are. Okay. And so God knew what they were doing on the outskirts of the camp. They were worshiping these ancient gods. So idolatry wasn't driven out of Israel at all. See, the idolatry still existed. When they took the promised land, I mean, turn to the book of Judges chapter 1. Okay, in the days of Joshua, they subdued the Canaanites. God told them, was it in Exodus chapter, 23, I think? They just tell them, look, I'm not going to drive the Canaanites all out in one fell swoop. He said, we're going to drive them out little by little, you know, and then every generation is going to have to learn war. You're going to have to fight it. Well, how do things go here in Judges chapter 1? Let's see here. See, in Judges chapter 1, we got Judah getting the possession, see? And verse 21. Well, let's do 18 through 21. And Judah took Gaza with its territory, or Gaza, as it's called now, and Ashkelon with its territory, and Ekron with its territory. Now the Lord was with Judah, and they took possession of the hill country. But they could not drive out the inhabitants of the valley because they had iron chariots. Oops. Then they gave Hebron to Caleb, as Moses had promised, and he drove out from there the three sons of the Anak. But the sons of Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites who lived in Jerusalem. So the Jebusites have lived with the sons of Benjamin in Jerusalem to this day. See, and you just follow this record through. Did they drive them out? No. Did Zebulun drive them out? No. Did Asher drive them out? No. Did Naphtali drive them out? No. Did they do what they're supposed to? No. Okay. So now what do you think is going to happen? The Israel that was in the wilderness was sacrificing to these pagan gods in the back tents. What do you think is happening now that they didn't drive all these idol worshippers out? What do you think is happening? Okay. Worshipping idols. Okay. Now this is serious business as far as God is concerned, since the commandment is you shall worship the Lord your God and serve Him only. See, so you have then the record here of the progression of the history of Israel. By the time we get to Ezekiel, God gives Ezekiel visions of what's going on in the temple. I mean, you had the chariots of the sun sitting right on the temple grounds. You had the priest, worshiping the images on the wall, serving paganism right in the temple area itself. And so you remember in Ezekiel, what happened is Ezekiel had a vision of the glory of the Lord rising up and leaving the temple. And the picture is that the glory of the Lord never came back to the earthly temple. But Israel did learn its lesson. See, it did. The remnant that was left after the destruction of Jerusalem in 586 did not worship idols. Now, that's where Isaiah fits. See, Isaiah was a prophet at the time of the destruction of the northern nation Israel because of idolatry. Isaiah prophesied in Judah during the times of Isaiah and in the following kings, Amos. And he was prophesying about the great God. And of course, he's pointing to eventually the coming of Jesus Christ himself. So Isaiah's prophetic work, see, is extremely important in the plan of God. He sits there as the great prophet who exalts the one God. And we're going to see that in quite a series or quite a succession of presentations that Isaiah is going to make. Now, what you also have to understand, that as God then brought the church into existence in Acts chapter 2, in the day of Pentecost, 30 AD, God's still prosecuting his warfare against idolatry. And so what you see in Christianity is you see the church, as it preaches the gospel, it's right up against the idols of the time. And the church is absolutely unwilling to compromise on the issue of idolatry to start with. Of course, secular history verifies that. Because Jesus, the idea is that Jesus and Jesus alone is to be worshipped. I mean, they understood that Jesus was God. So there was going to be no compromise, even to the point of death, on the part of those early Christians. They would actually refuse to say in any sense whatsoever that Caesar was Lord. They were not going to compromise on the issue of the worship of idols. Now, when the gospel goes into the Gentile world, the idea is that each of those that's encountered with the gospel is going to become a disciple. That is, they're going to become a student. And they're going to become a student of the entire Word of God. Not just a few key cliches like John 3:16 or maybe even John 3:5, if we can get that far. Or even Acts 2:38. I mean, don't get me wrong, I like Acts 2:38 some. And I like John 3:16 as far as that goes. But it's going to take a lot more than that. Now, as a side note, see, the so-called modern church has abandoned the idea that we're going to teach the whole Bible, because that's a lot of teaching, and in general, the modern audience isn't going to sit still for that much education. So that's not what we're here for, is that much education, see. So, but what God does, see, in that teaching process, then he uses a book like Isaiah in the strategic spot to also bring out to the modern Gentile pagan world exactly the same points that he was bringing out to Israel or the first century, see, that God is who God is. And so some of the greatest teaching on who God is come out of the book of Isaiah in this section, chapters 40 through 66. Thoughts or comments then? See, God has a plan. He has a long-term plan, but he also has a specific plan in the life of each individual. And, you know, at any given moment, you might not be able to see what that plan is. So Isaiah chapter 40 and verse 12. So he begins to ask some series of questions here. Isaiah 40 and verse 12. See, who has measured the waters in the hollow of his hands and marked off the heavens by the span? Span being hand width, okay? Calculated the dust of the earth by measure, weighed the mountains in a balance and the hills in a pair of scales. Okay, some great questions, you know. So what would you estimate last the tonnage of the Bridger Range, you know? Just give me a quick, you know. How many train loads of dirt out there?
15 million.
15 billion. Okay, that's a pretty good answer. Yeah, you know, man, you know, man can't even come close to doing this. This is a great question. See, now, you're modern, he doesn't believe that God exists. And so he doesn't believe there's anybody that could actually, you know, weigh this stuff. This is all here by accident. You know, there's a big bang that blew up about 14, 15 billion years ago. And out of this explosion, we have all this order. See? You know, when the boys used to wrestle in the living room, the mom of the house wasn't really excited about all that wrestling taking place, because it never once occurred that order was the result of the big bang that happened in the living room. There wasn't any order there at all. It was chaos, all right? So order does not resolve chaos. It's idiotic to think that it's going to. The fact is, the only reason a person would believe that order is going to result from chaos is if he doesn't want to believe in God. That he's already made a decision. He's not going there. That's all he's left with. That's what he's driven to. So you refuse to have God in your knowledge any longer. God gives you over to a depraved mind. You got no other place to go. So, but for the person that will bridge that gap and say, okay, if there's order, then there has to be an order maker. Somebody created it, see. And the answer is somebody big enough to do it. Verse 13, who has directed the Spirit of the Lord? See, who has marked off the Spirit of the Lord, or as his counselor has informed him? See, isn't it interesting that the Spirit of the Lord keeps showing up in the Old Testament? I thought he's a New Testament. I didn't think he showed till Acts 2. Actually, it was 2, all right. It was Genesis 1, 2. That's where the Spirit of the Lord shows up. So that's pretty early, okay? With whom did he consult, and who gave him understanding? Who taught him in the path of justice, and who taught him knowledge and informed him of the way of understanding? Obvious answer is nobody. See, the gurus of this world, you know, they're a big deal. As you come, you know, come sit at the feet of the guru, you know, just catch the vibes up there, and, you know, understanding, you know, you will know. It's just, you'll know. See, in the meantime, the guru's priests, you know, are at his feet, and they just give themselves totally to for the sake of the guru. I mean, these guys, you know, they lose their mind on drugs. Actually, the best thing you can do as a priest is to go insane for your guru. See, if you think the New Age movement is insanity, you're right. That's where it's going. I mean, who really has the understanding? See, who really has the knowledge? Where are the answers? You think the answers are in Mecca? Medina, maybe? At the Beijing Olympics, perhaps. If you can still breathe when you get there. What's he say? Verse 15. Hey, the nations are like a drop in the bucket. See, a lot of our English expressions come right out of the Bible. You've heard drop in a bucket all your life. That's where it comes from. See, with the publication of the King James Bible in about 1611, its distribution, and there are many Bible expressions that became a part of the terminology of the English-speaking peoples of the world. Okay, so you can go to Australia, New Zealand, you can go to South Africa, you can go to India. Every English is spoken. You use the expression drop in a bucket, they're going to know what you're talking about. But it comes out of here. They're regarded as a speck of dust on the scales. Behold, he lifts up the islands like fine dust. Even Lebanon is not enough to burn, nor its beast enough for a burnt offering. All the nations are as nothing before him. They are regarded by him as less than nothing and meaningless. So, do you think that the Lord up in heaven is scratching his head, wondering what to do with the inflationary policies of the Federal Reserve System? You think all the gold and the wealth of the czars that was placed in the safekeeping of the banks in New York, You think that impresses him. See, when the soldiers were shooting at the daughters of the Tsar in Ekaterinburg, they thought perhaps that the girls were charmed because they're shooting, the bullets were ricocheting. What happened is the girls had so many jewels sewn in their dresses that the bullets were actually hitting the jewels a lot of times and bouncing off. See, just a small idea of the wealth of the Romanov family, which would be interesting to know where that went. But what was the matter? Meaningless, less than nothing. See, I mean, how big's God anyway? And these, of course, questions that you and I want to actually be contemplating in our own lives, because who are we trusting in? I mean, the idea is we want to be trusting somebody big enough to do something about it. Now, it gets a little bit meatier here in verse 18. I mean, he's taking it to the next step. It says, to whom then will you liken God? Or with what likeness will you compare him? Zeus, perhaps. Of course, the Greeks hadn't really developed Zeus yet. They were still working at the level of the Titans. Who would you compare God to? Baal? Osiris, maybe? Marduk. Oh, the Epic of Gilgamesh. Okay, I mean, who? See, he says, as for the idol, the craftsman casts it, the goldsmith plates it with gold, silversmith fashions change of silver. He who is too impoverished for such an offering, see, with the gold and the silver, selects a tree that does not rot. He seeks out for himself a skillful craftsman to prepare an idol that will not totter. In an instance, I mean, you got to really fashion these things carefully so they don't tip over. Now, you notice that God actually laughs at this stuff. He actually laughs at it. You know, he's a little sarcastic sometimes. I've had some people say to me, "Well, I don't think you ought to use the type of humor that you use." And, I think I can back it with Scripture that there's a lot of sarcasm and a lot of laughing at how stupid this stuff is. See, when viewed from perspective. One of my favorite examples, I was talking to some people in Reno, Nevada one time. Her sister is a missionary to Taiwan. And where she's working, those particular Taiwanese have a god that they've fashioned. But it has to be in the sun. So all day long they're getting up and, you know, going out and moving that god so that it doesn't get in the shadows. See, what kind of a god is it? You got to go out and keep, you know, well, hope the shadow doesn't hit it. You know what I mean? it's laughable. I mean, but people worship. See, when people reject the knowledge of God, they get plunged into darkness. They get plunged into ruin. They get plunged into superstition. They're easy prey for all kinds of stupid stuff. You know? What's the difference between trusting in a God that has to have a sun and a rabbit's foot, you know? How about a rosary? Set of rosary beads. Say, well, what's the difference? It doesn't make any sense. See, but people, they believe stuff because they're in darkness. They don't know. So he asked the question in verse 21. He says, do you not know? Have you not heard? Has it not been declared to you from the beginning? Have you not understood from the foundations of the earth? It's he who sits above the vault of the earth. And its inhabitants are like grasshoppers, who stretches out the heavens like a curtain and spreads them out like a tent to dwell in. He it is who reduces rulers to nothing. He makes the judges of the earth meaningless. Scarcely have they been planted. Scarcely have they been sown. Scarcely have their stock taken root on earth. But he merely blows on them and they wither. And the storm carries them away like stubble. Man has a rather exalted opinion of himself. You think the amount of carbon dioxide being emitted by man matches the forest fire season. Then come close. And this is just one continent. Do you think North America is the only continent that burns up every summer? No, it's not. Okay. I got a kick out of it last summer. One of the experts said that all the carbon dioxide and stuff emitted in the fires, because it was natural, it had no impact on global warming. Only man-made carbon dioxide impacts global warming. So you got to see. But sometime get a globe and look at the Pacific Ocean. Now, if you get that globe just right and you look at the Pacific Ocean just right, it takes up half the surface of the Earth all by itself. You know, when we fly the Pacific, you know, even if we're going from Los Angeles, for some reason we go right past San Francisco and Seattle and Anchorage and the Aleutian Islands and the Kamchatka Peninsula and Japan. See, and I said, you know, and so you're looking at it, you know, once in a while they put these little projections up in the plane, you know, where you can tell how far you've come and how far you still got to go, you know. See, well, on those projections, it looks like this. But if you grab a globe and you get it set so you're looking at the western coast of the United States, and you follow that exactly in a straight line, you know what it's going to do? It's going to lead right up along Alaska, right down that peninsula, right to Japan, right to the Philippines. It's actually a straight line. What it is. You wouldn't think about it. All the rest, that's Pacific Ocean. Now, let me tell you something about the Pacific Ocean. And that's to say nothing about the Arctic Ocean, the Atlantic Ocean, or the Indian Ocean. Okay? Carbon dioxide dissolves in water. Do you know that? Yeah. Carbon dioxide dissolves in water. There's always a certain percentage of carbon dioxide in water. Did you ever notice a little scum, you know, that kind of forms, you know, when guys like me don't clean our bathrooms, you know? Did you ever notice that stuff? Okay. You know what that is? Calcium carbonate. Okay. Now, calcium carbonate, in case you're wondering, is CaCl3, okay? And so what it is there's calcium dissolved in the water, there's oxygen in the water, and there's carbon dioxide. And, you know, under certain conditions, that'll precipitate out. Now, if you get a couple hundred feet of that forming in a fairly rapid time, it's called limestone. And there's places like Bermuda where the carbon, the limestone shelves will form and dissolve and form and dissolve and form. Okay? So you think man is having that big an impact when you got that much reservoir for carbon dioxide out there? See, there's a lot of things that, you know, science is kind of held up as its own god, you know, it's got the answers. It doesn't. It's got some ideas. And, you know, basically you have some harebrained professors arguing with other harebrained professors in the peer review journals, all receiving federal funding. That's what you have, okay? But mankind is not that big. Now, the rulers of this earth are not that big either. I'm just totally amazed at this year's presidential campaign as to how many millions of dollars, what they figure to be over a quarter of a billion that Hillary will have raised or Obama will have raised. See, so just in the Democratic side, maybe a half a billion dollars. Do you ever wonder why some of these guys You know, Mitt Romney would put up a pretty good chunk of their fortune for a job that pays, what, $400,000 a year? So, what? There's something going on, okay. But the rulers of the earth, they think they're pretty big stuff, don't they? You know, Matt and Charlie remember the palace of Peter the Great in St. Petersburg. Pretty nice palace. I mean, think you could find a spot to lay down there some night, Charlie? I mean, it'd take you a while to walk through it, you know. So I'm sure old Peter the Great, when he built that thing along the banks of the Neva River, and you look at the carvings on that thing. I mean, I don't know how many serfs were involved in carving all those gargoyles all over that thing. You know, and we're talking something a lot bigger than a city block. I mean, it's pretty good size, okay? So, you know, Peter the Great, you know, how do you even get the name Great? You know, somebody thought he was something. And what is he compared to God? How about old Caesar Augustus? You know, the first real Roman Caesar. In fact, is the literal name for the emperor in the book of Acts, for example, is the Augustus. The Augustus. That was a title that we translate emperor. For Caligula or Claudius or whoever. Nero. So, the splendor of Rome. See, the might of Rome. You know, the standard. The troops march and the trumpets. Hail Caesar! Caesar is gone! You know, so how big is Caesar? Who do people put their trust in? Do you suppose there's anybody jockeying to get in close to Obama right now? Little name recognition, you know, here's my card, you know. I said, Senator, that's my card, you know. Suppose any of that's going on? How about with Senator McCain? You suppose there's some guys over there getting in early and often? Why? Well, some advantage, right? Because a man of power can do something for you. I mean, do people do that? Do you think there's more people trying to get in good with the earthly powers than there are trying to get in good with God? So I think the answer to that question is obvious. See, mankind is having a hard time with the idea that God is as big as He is. So what's the lifespan of man? So I'm always amazed at lilacs. I mean, I like lilacs. We got some around the house. And some reason, the lilacs always manage to bloom the week I'm away. I mean, they're just gone. How fast is that? We used to have a flowering crab or something in our front yard, you know. And, you know, how long those flowers last? A couple days, see, and then they're just blowing all over. You know, messing up the driveway, tracking in the house. It's a picture. It's a picture. See, scarcely have they been planted. Scarcely have they sown. See, I watch the farmers work in the fields. You know, you see them here on Nelson Road. When they can finally get into the field and say May, which they might have some challenge this year. You know, they get in there in May, you know, get her planted. And then what? Then the combines are hitting that thing in maybe September. See, I mean, I ain't even got used to jogging in the heat, you know, and the harvest is gone, and I'm already back into my winter jogging clothes. I mean, that's how fast it is. Well, who does the man think he is? Ooh. How big is God, though? The whole purpose is try to illustrate how big God is. And you can trust Him. So why would you let anything else even impact you? Thoughts or comments here, real quick? Rick.
There's an old joke about somebody who thinks they're so important. The joke is, he thinks he can change the weather. And lo and behold, modern man, atheistic as he is, thinks he can change the weather.
Yeah, true. That's a good point. We think we're warming her up. See, you know, temperatures are already dropped 0.75 Celsius in the last couple of years. See? Yeah. Mel.
I always think of, what would the Pharaoh pay to ride in an airplane?
Yeah.
I mean, just think of the difference.
You offering?
I'll take you for a ride.
He'd take you for a ride. All right. Yeah. But see, that's a good point. I mean, you know, if, you know, you catch Mel on a good weekend, you can catch a ride with him, you know. Might even take you for a run up by Glacier Park or something. But see, you know, that's pretty awesome when you think about it. And so the greatest of the earth, then, you don't even get to do what, you know, we can do right now. So, I mean, who is man? You know, Mr. Big Shot, all right? Verse 25, he says, then to whom will you liken me? That I should be his equal, says the Holy One. Lift your eyes and high and see who has created these stars. The one who leads forth their host by number. He calls them all by name. Because of the greatness of his might and the strength of his power, not one of them is missing. Every year, you know, around December 25th, I get these ads on the radio. You know, and periodically throughout the year, you can do something special. For only $54... you can have a star named for somebody. And we'll even list it in the star registry. And, you know, your loved one will receive the actual location of the star out there. And so if you get a big enough telescope, you might even be able to see the star that's named after you. Suppose somebody goes up there and puts a big sign on it. You know, this star is named Angel Face. You know, you think that's what happens? You know? He names them all. Well, sometimes you think, well, there are enough stars out there. Yeah. Even if we took every single person, one of the 6.5+ billion of us that inhabit this planet, there's more than enough stars in our own galaxy, and, you know, near as we can tell, there's at least 2.5 billion galaxies out there. I mean, but somebody knows the name of every star. Knows the name. Somebody knows how big the universe is. Not man, by the way. One of the questions I get quite a bit, really, is how big do I think the universe is? And I said, I think I know the answer to that question. It's 18 inches past what man's telescope will ever reach. You know. Well, who's going to prove that statement wrong? See? I mean, that's as good an answer as any, don't you think? But God knows. He made him. You know, how is it that the sun, exactly the right distance from the earth, puts out just exactly the right band of... See, every star actually puts out different sets of wavelengths. I mean, you can still see Orion in the sky. You ever look up there at the shoulder that'd be up on the right-hand side of Orion? That big old red star actually has the name Betelgeuse. And, you know, Betelgeuse does not put out the same type of light that the sun does. See, every star, I mean, some of them, boy, they are a bright white light. Some of them even got a blue tinge to them. See, every star is putting out a different type of light. Now, our sun is just kind of a really nice, mellow, slim, lower middle class, hard-working, blue-collar sun. And, you know, it just puts out a really nice, steady, really broad beam of light and has kind of all the wavelengths just kind of really nicely mixed in there. And it's also the right temperature and it just also the right distance from the earth so that everything works. I mean, what's the point? God made the sun special. Well, what's also the point? He also made Proxima Centauri special. That's our next nearest sun. That's why it has the name Proxima Centauri. Oh, about 4 or 5 light years out there, something like that. But so, you know, every one of them says so. Every one of them. He leads forth their host by number. He calls them all by name. Like a bunch of sheep, he knows every one of them. This sounds like a pretty big God, don't you think? I mean, how about tossing aside that little silver thing, you know? You remember when Jacob was getting ready to leave his father-in-law? You know, called his wives in. Said, hey, ladies, you know, I mean, this is your dad we're talking about here. But, I mean, I think we need to get out of here now. He's seen our flocks and our herds grow, and he's got that kind of jealous-looking eye. I think we ought to get out of there right here, right? And the lady said, yeah, we should, you know. And so, boy, in the middle of the night, they leave. And Jacob and the wives and the kids and the flocks and the herds. And what does Rachel do? She steals the household idol. Sweet little Rachel. Wife of Israel. Is it Rachel? Yeah, it's Rachel. I don't want you to. Something like this. To guide you, to pray to heal you of your diseases. No. You think modern man's any different? I see Carrie Underwood's coming to town. May. You know how they have their build? Idol. Right. What's the name of the show? American Idol. You know, if we got some female star, what do we call her? Diva. What is that? Hindu goddess, right? Now everybody's big into avatars. Did you ever ask a question what an avatar is? Better check that out before you get into avatars, all right? Just can't get away from it. What's the little name of the button, you know, for stands for Microsoft on icon? You think that Satan isn't at work? You think he's not pushing on the mind of man to push him back into the darkness? So verse 27, he says, why do you say, O Jacob, and assert, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, and the justice due me escapes the notice of my God? What are you saying that for? Saying he's not big enough? Saying he's not powerful enough? Do you not know? Have you not heard? Now listen to these words. The everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, does not become weary or tired. His understanding is inscrutable, as he doesn't miss anything. Okay. He gives strength to the weary. and him who lacks, he increases power. But listen to these words, you know. The Holy One, the Everlasting God, the Lord, the Creator. See how this is being exalted here is God's work and His plan. See, as He was working in the days of Isaiah, but as He continues to work to educate His disciples. See how these things are being exalted. See, so what? As He learned to trust Him. What does the sign say? If God's your co-pilot, change seats. You may have to think about that one. Maybe you ought to be the co-pilot. But what's that mean? That means that whatever God wants us to do, we what? We do. Whenever He needs us, we go. Whatever He wants done, we do it. He's big enough. He's trusting. You know, Gary and I were coming out of Taiwan the first trip we went over. And there were 200-mile-an-hour headwinds that were blowing off the coast of mainland Asia, you know. And so we're coming out of Taipei. And you should have seen that 747 bucking and balling, huh, Gary? I mean, you know, doing that. And we're in the back. We're about, what, six row 60 or something like that back there, you know. And it's kind of like, whoa! You know, it's a good thing you had your seat belts on. Seeing all the wings, you know, doing this, you know, out there. You know, it was about a month later, one of those broke apart. China Air, you know, broke apart coming out of Taipei. I mean, is God with us? There's a Navy crew chief there that's a Filipino, but he'd been a 25-year U.S. citizen. He said, well, of all the rides I've had, he said, I never had one like that. He said, I mean, even the military, he said, I never had one like that coming down there. God big enough to handle that? Sure. So who are you going to trust in? Who are you going to trust in? Well, He gives strength to the weary. To him who lacks might, He increases power. Though youths grow weary and tired and vigorous young men stumble badly, yet those who wait for the Lord will gain new strength. They will mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not get tired. They will walk and not become weary. That's why another name for the Holy Spirit of God is times of refreshing. God is the God of the second wind. You might have to think about that.